Studies suggest that nearly 20% of the Marines and soldiers back from Iraq suffer from post-traumatic stress disorder or major depression, and that half of them won't seek help. In the May 19th issue of the New Yorker magazine, Sue Halperin wrote about a scientist who adapted a video game as a tool for psychologists. Virtual Iraq simulates the sights, sounds, smells, and the feel of combat on patrol in a Humvee or on foot, rooting out insurgents in an Iraqi market town. Virtual Iraq lets the patient re-enter a traumatic situation slowly, just images at first, and allows a psychologist to ramp up the intensity by adding mortar explosions or the smell of burning hair. Today, Virtual Iraq and prolonged exposure therapy. If you're a combat veteran and have questions about Virtual Iraq, give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. And you can also comment on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. We'll begin with Sue Halperin. She joins us from Middlebury College in Middlebury, Vermont. And nice to have you on the program today.
Hi, Neil.
And you tried out Virtual Iraq. What's it like?
Well, it's pretty interesting. You put on a pair of goggles and earphones, and you enter this world. It's kind of consuming. I looked out of a Humvee. I was driving along, and you can't see yourself, but every time you move your head, it's as if you were actually in the car. So if you move to your head to the right, you know, you see what's going on and the person next to you. And then different things start to happen. So maybe a gunshot goes off and it cracks your windshield, or maybe the guy next to you gets shot and he slumps over and he's bloody, and an explosion goes off. And all these sensory variables are kind of being thrown around, and it's disconcerting, and it's shocking, and it's, you know, from my perspective as the writer, it was completely fascinating.
Was it convincing?
Well, I think that's a hard question to ask me, because I haven't been to Iraq, and it wasn't completely convincing for me. And that actually is a part of the power of this thing. If you don't have the kind of experience that this will trigger, it's not going to be that convincing to you. It has some moments. But if you have been there, it will start to generate all sorts of memories that you hold in you, and then it becomes extremely convincing. Hmm. And it's not the visuals, really. It's all the ancillary stuff. It's the smell, and it's the sound, and it's the feel that really get to you.
Let's bring in Skip Rizzo now. Albert Skip Rizzo is the developer of Virtual Iraq, and he joins us today from NPR's NPR West in Culver City, California. Nice to have you with us.
Hi, Neil. Thanks for having me on the show.
And from Sue Halperin's article, I know that it's sort of a development from a game developed many years ago called Virtual Vietnam.
Well, Virtual Vietnam was a virtual reality application used around 98, 99 to try to work with Vietnam-era vets in this fashion with prolonged exposure. And it showed a little bit of promise, even with vets that had many years after their trauma. And then what we did was we took, as a starting point, a computer game that the University of Southern California at the Institute of Creative Technologies we had worked on for combat tactical simulation training. It was called Full Spectrum Warrior. You can go out to a game store and buy it for your Xbox. But we had access to the art for that. And when I first saw this, it looked just like what I imagined Iraq to be. And we started with that. But since that time, it's evolved well past the game. It's no longer a game anymore.
It's no longer a game anymore. One of the critical factors is, as Sue was saying, you can add these elements in one at a time. The psychologist can add them in gradually as he or she sees that the intensity needs to be increased.
That's correct. And that's a very important element here, in that we're not doing anything that's like an automated treatment or a self-help tool. This is a tool to extend the skills of the clinician. So we're using already empirically validated treatment, the exposure approach, but doing it in a more controlled and more provocative fashion at the same time.
And Sue Halperin, you write that it seems counterintuitive to take a soldier who's suffering from traumatic stress and put him back in a traumatic situation.
That's right. I mean, you would think that what you really wanted to do is avoid that, and that's what a person does psychologically. Typically, they'll go do everything they can not to think about what happened. But the science behind this is pretty well proved that, you know, if you take a person who has had a trauma and you help them understand what's going on with that trauma by having them tell their story over and over and over again and sort of demystify it, take it apart, it really is very, very helpful in diffusing its power.
You tell us a story about a soldier you refer to as Travis Boyd.
Yeah, he was a very young man, went to Iraq as a Marine, became very close to his team leader in his group of four, and they were in Fallujah. And it was a bad scene all around, and this was a particularly bad day. And they were on the tallest building in the northern part of the city in a big firefight. He was told to go first, to run up to the top of the building. And when he got to the very top, they were under attack. He hesitated. He stopped. His team leader ran past him and was shot and killed. And from that moment on, he believed that it was his fault, that if he had just kept going, maybe he would have gotten killed, but his team leader would have been alive. And he lived with that for many years, and it just, you know, it tore him apart. He had seen lots of awful things, done bad things, things he really was very regretful of, but this particular instance was the one that just really, really got to him.
And by slowly integrating himself back into that scenario, he managed to, come to terms with it, at least to some degree.
Yeah, no, in a large degree. Part of what happens in this therapy is not only do you tell your story over and over again and your therapist sort of helps you work through it, but you're also given homework, things to do, the very things that you avoided doing. So one of his bits of homework was to call every single person who was on the roof with him that day and just ask them what their recollection was. That turned out to be incredibly powerful for him because not one person who was up there had any idea that he thought this, that he had done something wrong. They all told him that, in fact, the team leader said, "You stop at the top of the stairs. I'm going to go first." He didn't remember that.
Skip Rizzo, also, it seems that this approach of this kind of technology would be more acceptable to the Iraq soldier generation, even more so than the Vietnam soldier generation.
I think you bring up a key point there because we're dealing with a generation of soldiers that have grown up digital. They're very at home with this technology from their experience with gaming and so forth. And this is what we're hoping. We're hoping that this will take the heat or the stigma off of traditional talk therapy and draw in this generation of soldiers that see this as a tool that they can begin to therapeutically process what they've gone through. You know, I think that what happens in traditional talk therapy naturally occurs with this. We're not talking about this as a standalone approach. The therapeutic alliance is essential, and we don't even introduce VR as a treatment modality until at least the fourth session. So there's plenty of time where the therapist and the patient develop a bond and start to address things that you would see typically in therapy, but by calling it a virtual reality therapy, it may have more appeal and a little bit less stigma.
Yeah, Travis Boyd, Sue Halpern, you wrote, was a lot easier for him to tell his buddies, "I'm going to virtual Iraq as opposed to I'm going to the shrink."
Yeah, and it was still very hard for him, but that's absolutely true. And almost everyone else I talked to of that generation of soldiers said the same thing, that was much more appealing to them.
We're talking with Sue Halpern, a writer for The New Yorker magazine. Her article is Virtual Iraq, and with Albert Skip Rizzo, the developer of Virtual Iraq, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get Michael on the line. Michael's calling us from Cleveland in Ohio.
Yeah, I think the Virtual Iraq, computer simulation is excellent, and I got a cousin who came back from Vietnam in 1971. I wish there had been something around.
We're losing your phone there, Michael. I'm sorry. I think we lost Michael's cell phone. We apologize for that. How has this worked out? Sue Halpern, you write about experiments thus far and fairly limited.
Yeah, well, you know, there aren't a lot of these systems out there. They're just kind of getting up and running. And the preliminary research that's coming through has been pretty remarkable. The results that Skip is seeing in the study sites, there are six of them, The one that I write about most is from San Diego, the Naval Medical Center. They haven't seen that many patients, so you know it's very preliminary stuff. But one of the things that's happening is at the same time that's being tested, it's also being sent out to VAs and to vet centers and to other institutions where there are people in need, so that it won't be used as a clinical trial. It'll be used as therapy, and that's a very good thing. Mm. And hopefully one of the things that will happen is that they'll have therapists being trained how to use this equipment. So it'll be out there for all those people who need it.
Here's a clip from the virtual Iraq that Skip Rizzo was kind enough to send to us. You'll get an idea of what it can look like or sound like when a foot patrol in this virtual Iraq goes through an Iraqi market town and enters into an ambush. And you can hear different kinds of rifles firing in that scenario. Skip Rizzo, given all of the different kinds of scenarios, though, that a soldier might have encountered in Iraq, just two so far, the Humvee and the town?
Well, we tried to maximize what we could do early on in a comprehensive fashion for the most number of soldiers. So if you look at where people experience trauma in Iraq, oftentimes it's on a road in a Humvee with an IED or an insurgent attack as well, going through a city. So within each of those environments, we can create many different types of events. You can go up on a roof and have an attack occur. You can go into building interiors. You can walk through a marketplace. You can go through a mosque. You can drive through a small village and an attack may happen. A bridge, you have to go under a bridge and insurgents appear up on the bridge. And, you know, these are all elements that at this stage of the development, we tried to pick the environments in which, in a realistic fashion, we could introduce events mm-hmm. that might be most realistic to the most number of folks. And I want to add to this that this was designed based not on ivory tower thinking about what Iraq is like, but rather we had a system in Iraq embedded with a combat stress control team, and also some good work being done up at Fort Lewis in Washington, where soldiers came back and actually tried it, people without PTSD, and have told us what we've gotten right and wrong. And we've gone through many cycles of that, continually evolving the elements so that it becomes more relevant to people that were there and not something designed from the ivory tower of academia.
So it's important to get the appropriate sound, for example, of an AK-47.
That's right. We have their standard weapons, and also the AK-47 sounds significantly different than those weapons, and a wide variety of sounds that can be introduced into the environment.
And there's an element of shaking that you can make it feel like a Humvee is rumbling down the road, or that an explosion's gone off.
That's correct. We use a very low-cost base shaker system, something that people use when they build home theater systems or kids put in their car to listen to music and you can feel the vibration go through your car at a stoplight. We use those kinds of audio base shakers and put them under a piece of plywood and some 2x4s and some scrap carpet. And for a couple $100, you've got yourself a bass shaker, and the sound goes through that. So you actually feel the vibration of the Humvee or to some degree the concussive force of an explosion.
Thanks very much for being with us today. Skip Rizzo is the creator of Virtual Iraq. He's with us from NPR West in Culver City, California. And Sue Halperin was with us from Middlebury College, and she wrote Virtual Iraq for The New Yorker magazine's May 19th issue. She's also the author of Can't Remember What I Forgot. Thanks to both of you for your time today.
Thank you.
Tomorrow, we're back at the museum with the political junkie. Ken Rudin joins us to look at how to choose a running mate. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.